I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about sugar making us fat, making us sick, and now in the bullseye with calls for regulation. Of course, there is always pushback in the other direction. Here's an ad from the High Fructose Corn Syrup Advocacy Group. Simple Surprise put out this ad on what they call the facts about corn syrup.
Excuse me?
That has high fructose corn syrup in it.
And?
Yeah, you know what they say about it?
Like what?
I mean,
it's that it's made from corn, it's natural, and like sugar, it's fine in moderation.
Hey, it's natural. Belly up to the fructose bar. I want to bring a counter voice in here right now, if I may. Art Carden joins us from Memphis, Tennessee, professor of economics at Rhodes College. He's a contributor to Forbes magazine, a research fellow with the Independent Institute. Art Carden, thank you very much for being here.
Hi, Tom.
So we're looking at health consequences of very large consumption of sugar, and it is very large in this country. And you have read and seen what Dr. Lustig and his colleagues are proposing. What do you say to it?
Well, first, I'm not going to question the natural science here. I wholeheartedly agree that we are eating way too much sugar. I'm eating too much sugar. You're probably eating too much sugar. People you know are probably eating too much sugar. And the health consequences are probably bad. It's something else entirely, though, to infer from that that regulation and taxation will work. So you said at the top of the program, a couple of points here. Americans love sugar, and food processors love to feed it to us.
Sure do.
Mark Bittman made a very good point, an important point, that firms will do what's best for their bottom line. But I think that, I think there's a subtle question that we have to ask here about whether this is some sort of mass hysteria or irrationality, or whether it's people responding to the incentives that are in place.
But they're trying to change the incentives, let's say, by putting a big tax on it. You'd be less...
Okay. Right? That'll definitely say is commendable. Taxation is definitely preferable to outright bans and command and control and things like that. But I think it's a little bit more subtle. We have to have a more subtle discussion than about whether this is just a question of nanny state foolishness. Do we have the right to kill ourselves? And whether this is something that's going to, or whether this is what it takes to save our lives.
Well, I mean, the subtlety here is saying, look, we do this with alcohol already.
Right.
We do it with tobacco already. We put them behind the counter. We put them in special sections. We tax them. We do lots of things to discourage access and use.
Okay. Just because we do it with alcohol and tobacco doesn't mean it's a good idea with sugar.
Why?
It doesn't even mean it's a good idea to do it with alcohol and tobacco.
Well, we kind of had that.
Let's consider a couple of things here. So Mr. Bittman pointed out that he sees no alternative. I think there are alternatives. If we think about the food paradigm that we have in the United States today, a lot of it is due to heavy, heavy, heavy intervention that makes it incredibly cheap to produce stuff using high fructose corn syrup, using lots and lots of sugar. Dr. Lustig mentioned the early 1980s, a low-fat directive and a war on saturated fat. Well, you know, what happens when you take fat out of food? Well, you can substitute in sugar. Turns out, lo and behold, maybe that's much, 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 much worse for us. It's not clear to me that we know exactly what should be in food. And given our history of demonizing this, demonizing that, demonizing the other thing, I'm not entirely convinced that we have it completely right.
Well, let's say we don't even have a perfect solution, but look around. We've got an obesity crisis in this country. It is not hard to see. We've got a health care bill that is absolutely sinking us. If sugar is playing a major role in those things, and Dr. Lustig and many others say that it is, what do you do?
A couple of things. Okay, first of all, they pointed out the $147 billion annual health care cost associated with sugar-related...
Well, all kinds of costs, I think. Okay.
Okay, sure. All kinds of costs. I've heard $150 billion, roughly $147 billion. It's not clear that those are not necessarily social costs. Or if they are social costs, they're social costs because of the way that we subsidize health care. Consider, for example, it's an example that I gave to my students on Tuesday. Have you ever been in kind of like a food coma after lunch?
Yes, I have.
You have. Okay, yeah. We all know that feeling. You eat way too much at lunch. You're sunk for the afternoon. It's not clear necessarily that that is a cost to society.
Yeah, but so you're saying we can go bankrupt, collectively, or we can go bankrupt individually with the cost of this? But, I mean, isn't it an issue for the country either way?
No, not necessarily. Again, the only way that intervention would be justifiable in this case would be if there's spillover costs associated with my bad health decisions.
I mean, Dr. Lustig, you must be saying that there are spillover costs for the society
major,
as a whole.
Major spillover costs,
such as
65% $65 billion reduction in productivity, 50% increase in absenteeism, and most importantly, three surgeons general General and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff have now declared obesity a matter of national security because 75% of the potential new recruits have to be 4F'd because of obesity.
Okay.
They're too fat to serve in the military. Wow. Okay. I mean, that sounds like a social cost, Art Carden.
Okay. If those are reflected in lower earnings, they are not social costs.
Earnings. I mean, we're talking about...
Can I ask a question?
Sure. Mark Bittman, come in here if you would.
More productivity.
Sorry, Art. Mark Bittman?
Okay.
All right. You started off by saying you didn't disagree with the science of Rob's argument. And
no, I don't.
I'd really like... And you're saying that the regulation idea is a bad one, but I'd like to hear what your idea is for addressing overconsumption of sugar, or if you don't think it's a problem.
Art?
Oh, it's... Okay. So it's personally, I think it's definitely a problem. The reason for it is because we subsidize it very, very heavily, and we regulate food in such a way as to make enormous portions very, 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 very cheap. I think we need to get at the root causes rather than kind of hacking at the branches with things like taxes and whatnot.
So go to food subsidies and cutting back on food subsidies,
absolutely.
You're saying?
Absolutely, 100%.
Well, I'm certainly for that. I think there's not an economist worth his salt, and you're an economist, so correct me if I'm wrong, that actually thinks that food subsidies are a good idea. The only ones who say they are a good idea are the ones who work for the government.
Right.
Here's the question. If we got rid of food subsidies, if we got rid of the corn subsidy in particular, what would that do? So presumably that would increase the cost of specific foods, maybe food in general.
Right.
Certainly we saw that when we diverted the part of the corn crop to ethanol a couple of years ago, we ended up with price riots in Thailand, which caused the ouster of their prime minister. Mm. So this has global implications doing this. Now, here's the question. If you did that, and if you made junk food more expensive, would that reduce consumption, particularly amongst the poor? And I would argue that it would not, because they don't have access to any other food.
Do you believe in
the
law of demand?
Deal with that, we can't even consider a reduction in subsidy.
But wouldn't it be the same?
Do you believe in the law of demand?
I do believe in the law of demand. In fact, I used to live in Memphis, Tennessee, where you are at Rhodes College, and we went to see the Board of Aldermen. I belong to a group called the Memphis Area Society of Parenteral and Enteral Nutrition, MASPEN, and we went to the Board of Aldermen and talked about what was going on in Orange Mound in terms of the loss of grocery stores and the proliferation of Popeye's fried chicken and other fast food outlets. And one alderman looked down his nose at us and said, "You want to take away the single thing in these people's lives that give them pleasure?"
Wow. Well, deep fried chicken.
We've got a bigger problem than even you're talking about, Mr. Carden.
What do you say, Art Carden?
Okay, a couple of thoughts here. First, Dr. Lustig just said that raising the price of unhealthy foods by eliminating subsidies would not address the problem because the poor have access to nothing else. First, that's wrong. That's inconsistent with the law of demand. When prices rise, people demand less of something. Second,
but junk food might still be the cheapest among their options.
Perhaps, but the relative price of junk food might rise, causing people to substitute away from junk food and toward healthier options. Second, it is inconsistent with Dr. Lustig's own argument that we need to tax junk foods, that we need to regulate junk foods in order to make them more expensive. Because if the poor are not responsive to changes in prices, then the policy he's proposing is not going to work.
I'd like to jump in,
Mark,
here,
please.
If I might.
Yep. Mark Bittman.
A reduction of subsidies is not going to raise the price of things that much. And if the goal is to raise the price of unhealthy foods, then you need to reduce or eliminate subsidies and tax them. And B, it's not just the poor we're talking about. It's everyone. Everyone except,
agree.
You know, half the country is overweight or obese. So half the country is not qualified as poor. So we're talking about not just increasing the price of a can of soda by 2 pennies or 5 cents or whatever eliminating subsidies would be, but by raising it to the point where it becomes expensive and people have to think twice about buying it.
It's going to take more than a couple of cents here. Bob, Rob?
Sorry, I might also add that 40% of normal weight people have the same metabolic dysfunctions that occur in metabolic syndrome. That is heart disease, type 2 diabetes, et cetera. So we're not just talking about the obese or the poor. We're talking about pretty much everybody. Just quick mathematical analysis suggests we're talking about 60% of the country.
Let's go to our listeners, John in Vernon, Connecticut. John, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call, Tom. One thing I really haven't heard that everyone discussing is, and believe me, I do believe that obesity is a huge problem in this nation, but there doesn't seem to be any talk about educating parents. There just seems to be regulate, regulate, regulate. And I'm a parent. I have three children. My oldest child has allergies to tree nuts, peanuts. And I've, you know, since my child's been born, I've learned to look at packages. I've been educated. I know I have to read all the packages. I have to look for what's bad for my child.
John, let us look at that. Rob Lustig, can we educate the population out of this addiction?
Okay, bottom line. Education is necessary, and I totally agree with education, but all of the data, not just in alcohol and tobacco, but with food so far, says that it is not sufficient. So I am for education. God knows. That's what I do every day in obesity clinic, and you can come to my clinic and see what we do. But the bottom line is it will not be sufficient, and there are several reasons why. The first is that the parents are addicted, not just the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, when we ask the parents to get rid of the sugared beverages from their homes, they haven't done it.
And the reason is
because they're addicted.
Right.
So that's the first problem is that, you know, we're not just dealing with the children here, we're dealing with the parents.
Mm-hmm.
And the second reason is because if everything has sugar in it, what would you propose people eat? So, you know, just educating them isn't going to solve the problem. Unfortunately, what we have to do is we have to change the food supply. And that's right now under the control of the food industry.
John writes here online.
I might add that, yes. Dollars for education at the moment run about 1/3 of 1% what dollars for marketing junk runs. So you're going to have to increase those dollars by a great deal to have a sort of fair fight here.
There is that. John writes online, he says, must I be sickened by salad dressing, sauces, lunch meats, breads, vinaigrettes, everything? Is this a conspiracy? Everything we eat has morphed into dessert. Why? Bob in Fairfield, Iowa. Thanks for calling, Bob. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel really torn. I'm actually a Coca-Cola shareholder, and yet I consume probably less than two teaspoons of sugar a day. I'm very conscious.
I have
Mark's vegetarian cookbook on my shelf. And last week I watched a three-hour video presentation and an investor presentation by Coca-Cola online.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And they were talking about how they target sugar products to the youth. And I mean, these are marketing people.
Sure.
And how they slice and dice all their customers. And the first one they try to get them on is sugar. I watched this on their website.
It's business.
And I just ended up being very torn about it. And they have this incredible digital presence with all the social media targeting the young people. They have the highest number of subscribers from the youth. So here's a torn individual in terms of my investment with Coke and what I know to be right.
You know, Bob, it seems like we would do well to make your personal decision here a national bias, maybe not your investment decision. I appreciate your call. One more, Jennifer in Geneseo, Illinois. Jennifer, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you know?
I'm a substitute teacher, and I went to the school one day and went to breakfast with the kids, and they were serving the kids Trix yogurt, Lucky Charms with chocolate milk on top, and a chocolate chip cupcake for breakfast.
Wow.
I counted up all of the sugar grams in this. It was 64 grams of sugar, and this is what they're feeding to preschoolers and kindergartners and the rest of the elementary kids.
For 50-pound kids. Oh, good Lord.
Right, yes.
Jennifer, that's the shocking... Our time is so short, but that's the shocking truth of it right there. Mark Bittman, tell us about Rhonda Storms, this Republican state senator in Florida, what she's trying to do and the reaction she's had.
Well, Rhonda Storms is a Republican state senator in Florida who who's not known for her, let's say, progressive views, but she got up in the state Senate and proposed that food stamps be disallowed for the purchase of non-nutritive items like, well, especially sugar,
candy, soda,
chips
yeah.
and candy.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
go on, Mark.
She was the interesting thing I thought was that she was attacked from both sides of the aisle, from the Republicans for sounding like Michelle Obama, and from her fellow, and from Democrats for sounding like a Republican who was attacking the poor.
And Coca-Cola and Kraft were in her office like flies on
she
honey.
She said like the next day, Coca-Cola and Kraft were in her office calling her un-American.
Art Carden, what do you suggest here?
So you raise a very interesting point, and one with which I would agree. I think that there's an assumption that's unwarranted in a lot of this, which is that regulation, taxes, subsidies, et cetera, are done for the public benefit. When you look at food stamps and things like this, if anything else, these are probably just indirect transfers of resources from taxpayers to powerful special interests, primarily agricultural firms, large corporations, and things like that, that just happen to pass through the hands of the hands of food stamp recipients.
I'm getting a lot of theory, but what do you do about the sugar that's sitting on our guts? What do you do about it?
Couple of different things. First, make sugar more expensive by reducing the subsidies, by eliminating the infrastructure that makes makes sugar so easy to get, and then one thing to do would be to make driving more expensive. We subsidize driving. That's one of the reasons that
get out there and walk. There's a big picture take on it. It might work. It might not. Art Cardin at Rhodes College in Memphis, Tennessee. Our time is so short here, but I thank you for joining us today. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.